So, yeah, I guess we're officially podcasting now. We're sitting here with a French press, and I just wanted to tell you that the French press reminds me of a cafe where I was last time I was in Portland. My friend and I went to this cafe in her neighborhood, and they serve coffee in little French presses. And it reminded me of the cafe because the cafe has the lamest name ever. It's called Rump Spankers.
Wow.
Yeah. They actually had some vegan stuff. Like they had, and they serve everything in like cast iron griddles. So you order something, they just bring the griddle out, which is kind of gross, but kind of cool.
I like that. I mean, you can really get your iron.
Yeah.
From that. You can really maximize.
And your seasonings.
Yeah, you know.
Help yourself to coffee. And the listeners can help themselves to coffee as well.
Yeah, so pull up a chair, gentle listeners.
That's right.
Join us.
You're listening to the show without title.
Right. So maybe that should be our first topic. What should we call this podcast?
And do we want to use our real names?
Right, right.
I don't mind using my real name.
I don't either. If Issa and Josh can use their real names,
true.
We can use our real names.
Without shame.
Right.
They have a lot more to be shamed of than we do, let's be honest.
Their podcast is well, kind of ludicrous.
Their lives in general, I think they have a lot to be ashamed of.
That's true, though. I haven't seen either of them in quite a long time, yeah. So I'm not in as good a position to judge, but...
Yeah, and you know. One of them is actually paying me money right now, so
right,
maybe I
right.
shouldn't shit talk. At least until I get that next check in the mail.
Right. Well, you know...
Oh, but I was going to say, when we were talking about whether we were going to use our real names or not, I was very upset because, as you know, I'm starting my Etsy shop, and it's called Strange and Violent Creations.
Yes.
Which I got the name from, it was something Pranjal told me, actually, my boyfriend, for the listeners out there. Yes, I'm taken. Sorry. he saw something ages ago when the first Jurassic Park came out. They had some interview with Jeff Goldblum at the press junket, and some amazing reporter had the idea to ask him, what do you think it would be like if dinosaurs really did come back? Which, you know, talk about a thought-provoking question. And Jeff Goldblum's answer was, I think it would be strange and violent. So that's the name of my clothing company. So... You know how punk rock names work. I mean, you've obviously got a punk rock name from when you were in a band.
Yeah.
And, so
the
like,
least punk rock name ever.
I like it. I think it's pretty cool. But so I'm like, okay, this is my chance to have a punk rock name. I'm going to be Erica Strange or Erica Violent. And then I was like, Erica Violent sounds pretty stupid. It sounds like Erica Anarchy or something like that. So I was like, Erica Strange, that's pretty good. But then I was worried that it might sound too much like Emily the Strange,
right.
Like every teenage goth girl that's been a Hot Topic has an Emily the Strange thing. But then I was like putzing around on Hulu or whatever, and they had some promo video. It was like a video blog of this character, and I think the name of the show is something really stupid like Being Erica or, you know, like Life with Erica, and her name is Erica Strange, and I was like, god damn it, they stole my idea. And they didn't even spell Erica with a K, they spelled it with a C.
That sucks.
It does suck.
You, I don't know, maybe you can sue. Or just send her a strongly worded letter and
strongly worded email.
Yeah.
Strongly worded podcast.
Yeah.
But it looks like a pretty amazing show. It's all about how something about how she's popular, like the high school is the best time of her life, and then she magically gets transported back to high school and it's like 1991. And she's like, what the?
Wow.
And that's the premise of the show with Erica Strange.
Jeez. Well, clearly we're outmatched. We should just stop now.
Yeah, let's just give up.
So, well, we don't have a name.
But we do have some great ideas.
Yeah. Your Jeff Goldblum story made me think maybe we should just entitle the podcast Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. Although then he might sue us for stealing his punk rock name.
That's true. Though could we like hyphenate punk rock names? Like I could be Jordan Pattern Goldblum and you could be Erica Strange Goldblum.
Or we could just split it up like Jordan Gold Pattern and Erica Strange Bloom.
Yes.
I like that.
Actually, that works okay. That's not bad.
Yeah. Although I don't like Jeff Goldblum because apparently he used to beat up on Gina Davis when they were married.
That's right. That sucks.
Yeah. What a dick move.
Otherwise, I like him. I even like him in Independence Day. The Jewish television technologist.
Oh, those Jews. Those Jews and their media.
Yep. Oh, yes. Yes. They're taking over and so clever with money.
Yeah, yeah. Just like the Asians.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And though the Asians don't have a bunker 6 miles below That's the true. Surface of yeah. the earth.
And they don't have their own secret police force, which right. the Jews do.
Right, right.
So, yeah, as much fun as anti-Semitism is, you had the great idea of having a great burrito off.
Right, right.
Now that you live officially in the Bay Area.
Yes. Because
when we first started this podcast idea, you were still living in Edmonton, but now it's we live true. In the same area, so we can...
Yes, well, you know, since this podcast is going to have a wide and varied listenership from yes. all over the world, I thought it'd be a really good idea to just review the local options for the people of the world.
Yes.
So that they can know what they're missing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they can know how much we rule in yeah. San Francisco.
And, you know, international and non-San Francisco listeners, suck it up. I had to listen to everybody from all over the world talking about how great their parts of the world were while I was stuck in Edmonton for 27 years, so...
And as a brief digression, I think a very good thing that we should do for the podcast was, I believe it was Katie Badmouth who was talking about how she wanted to have a column or something called Stop Your Fucking Whining, Your Stupid Fucking Sissy.
Right, right,
about
yes.
being vegan in places like, you know, Tennessee and
yep.
Idaho and stuff like that. So yep. I think that would be fun. We should invite her to do a correspondence section for
our
podcast.
I think we should. On
shutting the fuck up if you're a fucking whiner.
Exactly. Because that's important. As vegans.
Yeah.
You know, really, I think it is very important to stop our fucking whining.
Especially if you live in a city like San Francisco and yes. you, for example, get very angry because a certain taqueria, the meat touchy veggies, even though you tell them no meat touchy veggies.
Yes.
Because apparently, you know, you're speaking to Chinese people in the 1930s when you go to a taqueria in San Francisco.
Right.
and so, yeah, let's do our great burrito off now that we've brought this full circle.
All right. Well, I don't know. How do you want to do this? Do you want to do like head-to-head, one-for-one battle, or?
Well, let's first address the elephant in the room, that is papalote.
Okay. Okay. So papalote, as I understand it, is controversial. One of the yes. main controversies is surrounding their house salsa.
Yes.
Which is either
the best salsa in the world,
or not the devil's great. Semen. Like it's bad, apparently, to some people. I love it. What do you think?
It's not my least favorite. My least favorite would be that, you know, paste picante in a can.
Right, right, okay.
So, you know, that's Fair a enough. Pretty low bar right there. You know, I think somebody described it as suspiciously creamy, mm-hmm. which again calls to mind the devil's semen comment, but I think the right salsa shouldn't be creamy. It has like a pinkish, orangish tint. That shouldn't exist normally in salsa. And it's an interesting taste, but it doesn't have that salsa taste that you expect from a taqueria.
See, I think I heard somewhere, I can't remember where, it might have been on the Vegansaurus blog, which mm-hmm. I am obsessed with, that creaminess actually comes from ground up pumpkin seeds.
Whoa.
In the salsa, which is kind of a revelation.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to take some time to come to terms with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I acknowledge that it's not normal, you know, taqueria salsa, because I'm an mm-hmm. expert now that I've been here for a little more than a
yeah,
month.
Yeah, totally.
but I don't know. There's something about it. I just, it's tasty. That shit is tasty.
and it's really... tasty. I'll give you that. It's tasty. I think it's so... different from other salsas that it's kind of in a different category.
Yes, okay.
So I think it's difficult to qualify it as the best salsa because it's got fucking pumpkin seeds in it.
Right.
That's some crazy shit.
Right, okay.
That's
okay.
Some nouveau cuisine crap right there.
So we can both agree that the salsa is...
It's good.
It's good.
It's all right.
Okay, all right.
It's not my favorite salsa.
Right.
I'll put that out there.
So the burritos themselves, I mean, I've only ever had the normal... roasted mm-hmm. veggie ones, and they have giant pieces of carrot in them, which at first I really didn't think I would like, but I actually kind of do.
I'm of the firm stance that carrots and potatoes should not be in burritos, and I've had a burrito with carrots and potatoes, and that was it was a harrowing experience. It really forced me to reexamine all that I hold dear in life.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it.
No,
to put it simply.
I see. I can appreciate the normal old traditional burrito, mm-hmm. you know, with the rice and the tomatoes mm-hmm. and, you know, salsa and beans and whatever. And I like those burritos, mm. but, I don't know. Sometimes when I feel like I'm on the edge of getting scurvy or, I've been eating too much fried vegan food, because my husband doesn't like vegetables. he does. He just doesn't eat them. You know, a big piece of GMO carrot the size of your fist in your in your burrito is not so bad.
True.
I could kind of take or leave the potatoes, though.
Yeah.
Potatoes, nah.
I love potatoes.
Yeah,
I love burritos, but never the twain shall meet.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I've had burritos with potatoes, like Edmonton burritos from my
sounds like a contradiction in terms.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of is. But my old place of work, you know, they made their own beans and everything. So they had, like, good beans. But they would have, like, you could put, like, home fries in the burritos. Mm-hmm. And that was good. But that was because they were, like, fried and they were crispy and they had some.
That's
but
just starting like, to sound more like a wrap than a burrito.
Yeah, technically it was. But, I mean, it was Edmonton and I took what I could get. So,
sure.
You know, I mean.
I don't judge you.
Thank you.
When you're crashing the Andes, you sometimes have to eat some
eat
human.
People.
Yeah. When you're in Edmonton, you sometimes have to eat a hash brown burrito.
Yes.
That's okay.
It's true. It's true. We didn't even fold the ends. I mean, it was just, yeah. It wasn't really a burrito, but it was good. It's tasty.
It's a dosa.
Sort of. But with a tortilla. So
yeah, papalote.
Papalote. Okay, let's give these ratings. Should we do like 5 stars or like 10 out of 10?
I think like, 5 makes it easier.
Okay, all right. So I give papalotes like 4.5.
I give their salsa a 3, or maybe a 3.5, but I give their food a 2. It's kind of uninspired.
All right.
I mean, if you just have like the plain bean burrito with vegetables and stuff. It's kind of underwhelming. My favorite is, in the Mission, my favorite is El Toro, which is the same as Pancho Villa, but it has shorter lines because it's on 17th and Valencia, not right next to the 16th Street BART. And then in the Castro, my favorite is Taqueria Zapata. That's really good. And they have like a red salsa that will literally burn your butt off the next day.
Oh dear, I can get down with El Toro and Pancho Villa. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Pancho Villa or El Toro. I went to El Toro by myself mm-hmm. the last time that I was in town before I moved here, and I had an enjoyable taco experience. I don't really get tacos yet; they kind of confuse me.
Do they fill you with an inexplicable rage?
No.
Like you're angry that they confuse you?
No, I kind of get them and then I'm really self-conscious. and I'm like, I don't know quite how I'm supposed to eat this. And there's 2 little tiny tortillas instead of just one. And
that's true. It is a challenge.
I'm like, what? Do I make a sandwich? Like, I don't know. And
I think you do have to kind of reach the right level of training to eat
yeah.
the taco. You have to
yeah.
you have to work your way up to it.
Well, and I feel like people are watching me and they're like, look at the
it's
Canadian
not kid
with
shit.
Her taco. And then I'm like, oh god.
There's a big neon sign above you.
Yeah, exactly.
Canadian.
Exactly. So apparently there is because several people have told me how Canadian I am. Mostly Mike, my husband, thinks I'm incredibly Canadian and very amusing. But I don't know. I've had people call me out on my accent and stuff.
You did say avocado today, which
avocado?
I found very amusing.
A rundown of my Canadian words.
Yes.
As identified by Mike. I say pasta.
Yes.
I say drama.
Yes.
I say avocado.
Yes.
I say basil. Is that how you guys say it here?
No, we say basil.
Okay, that's what I thought. I say sorry.
Yes.
Which is apparently different than how you guys say it.
We say sorry.
Right. And I don't think I say about and out and
no, you don't.
Anything differently,
no.
But apparently I do. But I can also pronounce things like Saskatchewan.
Yes. Have you met people in the U.S. that can't
pronounce many, it? Many can't. Well, huh. Mike doesn't get it. But lots of people not from that region say Saskatchewan when it's not. It's Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But...
Well, to be fair, you guys did have trouble saying Sebastopol, so.
Mike had trouble saying it. I had trouble remembering it.
Oh, okay.
I kept thinking of Constantinople, which is not really...
That would be cool if that were a city in California.
It would be. It would be. I would move there, maybe.
Hmm.
We're a little off the burrito track.
Yeah, now, we kind of...
Yeah, okay.
The burrito train got derailed.
Right. Anyways, back to El Toro and the tacos.
Yes.
I like El Toro. I like that they have tofu that
yes.
you can get. That's really good. And I like their grilled veggie stuff, even though I don't think broccoli is really all that authentic in a taco. But it's good.
I don't like any grilled veggies in a taco.
Mm.
Zucchini, onion, all that shit.
I like, you know, I'm down with like peppers and onion and zucchini and, and that kind of thing. But yeah, not much else. What? Oh, mariachis is the...
Yeah.
Point of some controversy on the vegan internet.
Right, because the meat-touchy veggies.
Right, right. The Yelp review that yes. I read was fairly horrifying, and the writer said that she'd had some trouble getting the people to understand at mariachis that she didn't want the meat to touch the vegetables. And you know, she was really clear and communicative because she told them that the meat, no touchy vegetables. Mm. So,
because whenever you're talking to somebody for whom English is a second language, adding a Y at the end.
It's helpful.
Yeah.
No, it really helps. I mean.
It's almost as good as speaking loudly.
Yeah, I think she did that too.
Okay, good.
So she covered those bases. She did everything that she could to make herself understood that she didn't want meat in her vegan burrito. And apparently it wasn't good enough, and she had a speck of meat in her burrito, which is I don't like that.
No.
I don't like meat in my burrito, but you know, the bunch of times that I've been to mariachis, every single time they have not screwed up. And they have beer there. Which I guess most places do, but they have pretty decent beer at mariachis, so it's the only taqueria that I've ever had beer at.
Oh, okay.
For whatever reason. And yeah, they have a burrito that comes standard with no dairy and with
nice.
Lots of guacamole, which is good.
And you said it's under $5,
yes, it's
right?
Under $5. I think it's like $4.20 or something on the menu.
$4.20, dude?
Yeah, I know. It comes with
all
the joint.
Stoners, yeah. All the stoners go and order their burritos.
Yeah, and... But no, every time I've been there, they've been really nice, and they clearly understand what vegan is and what vegetarian is, so I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know.
And that is also at 16th and...
16th and Valencia.
Valencia.
Yes.
Excellent.
And yeah, they've been there for a long time, and that was the very first burrito that I ever had in San Francisco, back when I came here to do my audition for the conservatory.
Ooh.
Yes, I went there, and I had an Anchor Steam beer.
Excellent choice.
A burrito. And I read, I think, one of the free weekly papers. I don't remember which one. But I was suitably awed by the city.
Good.
Yes.
Good to hear it.
So are there
San Francisco,
any, like...
awing Canadians since 1907.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know. Is that it for, like, acceptable taco burrito places here?
That's my favorite short list.
Okay.
I've heard El Castellito... Well, there's like two El Castellitos. There's one on Mission and one on Church.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard they're both like totally amazing. And I forget the one on Mission because I went there so long ago. And I think it was before I was vegan. And I've been vegan 9 years. So that says something right there.
Yeah.
I don't remember it. But I went to the one on Church and it was kind of okay. I don't know. I think you just kind of develop a taste for your favorite taqueria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you go somewhere that doesn't have that same taste, then...
You know what we should do? We should go on a fact-finding expedition.
We
there's
should.
There's a couple. There's Cuco's that J-Mo swears by.
Okay.
And
is that also on Church? I think I went there with her.
No, it's on Haight.
Oh, okay.
And it's only open on weekdays.
Oh.
So, and then there's also the little chihuahua, which is on Divisadero, and which has, like, cactus and mole and all that good stuff. And then, yeah, I don't know. There's one, like, a block away from my house that Mike says sucks, but I kind of would like to try it just because it's a block away from my house.
That's true.
And it's vegetarian. Like, all their beans are safe and everything, so.
That's the great thing about San Francisco is, like, every taqueria, well, most every taqueria that has a... vegetarian beans and rice.
Yes. Yes. It's good. But so I guess that ends our taco burrito installment for this show. And then we can update.
I was thinking, instead of a pub crawl, we could do a burrito crawl.
Oh yes. That would be good.
And like literally crawling down the street. Yeah. I think the movement would help us digest along our stomachs.
Yep.
The slow pace would give us time to digest and fit more burritos in.
I'm still working on being able to eat a whole burrito at once.
It's a challenge.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I can only do it when I'm in my prime.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm not feeling up to it, it's a challenge.
It's hard. And see, I kind of have to do it because if I don't... then Mike will eat the rest.
Yeah,
and
no leftovers
and
for you.
Hurt his stomach. Well, no, I don't mind really about the leftovers, especially if I'm paying $4. But he will hurt his stomach, and then he will rip open his esophagus and die. And I don't want that to happen.
That happens so much. I'd a nickel for every time Mike ripped open his esophagus and died. God.
God damn it. What should we move on to?
Well, I have my whole book of ideas.
Okay, all
which,
right.
Which, if you'll remember, when I came to visit you in Edmonton, I'd been scribbling on it on the airplane.
Yes,
I remember. I realized too late that I brought a Sharpie on the airplane, and it was an enclosed space, and I think the guy that was sitting next to was giving me dirty looks, and I was like, shit, I gotta own this Sharpie, I brought it on the plane. Basically I've been watching a lot of movies, because I am unemployed.
And how about that? Me too.
Unemployment rules. Especially if you can get payment from the state for it.
I wonder if I could get unemployment from the Canadian government.
Go for it, dude. thanks, Uncle Arnold. Keep those checks coming. Actually, as a little digression, I was joking with somebody that I'm kind of like the conservatives' worst nightmare because... I think at one point I caught myself saying, as soon as my next unemployment check comes in, I'm going to go and get my medical marijuana card. And I was like, wow, if Bill O'Reilly had just heard me, he would like cream his pants.
Well.
But yeah, I've been watching a lot of TV and movies and blah, blah, blah. So I've been writing all these notes, and mostly I watch them when I'm stoned. So I have these thoughts, which I think are like totally genius and which probably aren't, but I wrote them down anyway. So I can talk about all the great movies I've seen and ask you if you've seen any movies like that. I should probably stop turning away from the mic to pet my dog. It's probably really annoying. The movie that's freshest in my mind, and which I kind of mentioned over brunch. We just had a great brunch, you guys. It was so awesome.
Yep.
You should have been there.
We are the ladies who brunch.
Yes. So I wanted to ask you... this movie I watched last night had several very interesting bits, and I wanted to ask you there was one character who had a particularly bad accent, and I wanted to ask you, what are your favorite bad movie accents?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, I haven't seen this movie, but the previews on TV, this is a very recent, like, currently in theaters movie, is... whatever that dude is that plays Richard Nixon in the Frost and Nixon movie.
Oh, I have no idea who that is.
It's supposed to be great. And I've seen the guy before, and Mike knows who he is.
So wait, are you talking about Frost Nixon, or are you talking about a different movie starring the same guy?
No, Frost Nixon.
Okay.
And there's the there's that bit in all the previews where Frost says, you know, are you telling me that wasn't illegal? And then Nixon says, I'm telling you that when the president does it, it's not illegal.
Oh.
And he sounds so British. And it's not Nixon at all. So, sorry, man. Like, I heard that you were great, but that's been really bothering me.
Yeah, it totally bums me out when an actor slips up like that, because it really, especially if it's actually a good movie,
and
it draws you out of action and it reminds you, like, this person is a paid actor.
Totally.
Like, in Arrested Development, there's definitely scenes where Portia de Rossi, like, slips, and she's, like, Australian all over the place. And then she goes back to being American.
I had no idea that she was Australian.
Yeah. Yeah. God. There's times in that movie, or in that show, where she slips up, and it's kind of like, oh, come on. God.
Well, you know, she is a lesbian.
Yes. You know how those lesbians are, with their fake accents.
Yeah, wishy-washy.
Oh my God, can I just freak the hell out about George Takei, Mr. Sulu?
What?
Who I used to love because he was fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he came from a very disadvantaged past where he was interned with, you know, thousands of other Japanese Americans, and his family lost their land. And, you know, he overcame all that to become, you know, arguably one of the first successful Asian Americans on American television.
And with a very compelling voice, I might add.
Yes, yes. And then later came out, and, you know, so he's, obviously he's broken down a lot of walls in his time. He's a very cool dude. And when that, he did that hilarious video when there was that basketball player who said on the radio, yes, like, I hate gays, I'm a homophobe. And he did that hilarious video where he's like, well, we don't hate you, we love you. We love your strong, sturdy calves and your muscular back. You know, he's just, you know, he's a really cool guy. And then I know when they legalized gay marriage last year in California, he married his partner of several years. And I was like, you know, that's really cool. And, you know, the campaign to defeat Prop 8, which if you've been living under a rock for the last year, is the California proposition to make gay marriage illegal, and to actually write it into the California Constitution. And it passed in November by 2%, or, well, 4% of the vote. It was 48 against and 52% for. So yeah, when no one Prop 8 came around, you know, he wasn't involved. But I seem to remember thinking, you know, he's a very private man. I seem to remember that about him. And I was like, well, I can kind of respect that. You know, I mean, it's a shame that he doesn't want to take a public stand to defend his marriage, but whatever. But who did get involved was, I forget her name at the moment, but she played Lieutenant Uhuru, or Uluru, or whatever.
Oh, Michelle Nichols.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so she got involved, and she went on campus speaking tours. And I thought that was really cool. She was, like, the maid of honor at their wedding.
Right.
And I was like, that's awesome. Because, you know, obviously she's a groundbreaker, too. She was one of the first very successful African-American females on American television.
Right.
So that was awesome. I'm like, well, you know, I can understand if George doesn't want to get involved. He's a very private individual, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, a week after Prop 8 passed, I remember reading on The Guardian, the British Guardian, that he was going to be in this British reality show called I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, where they take, like, D-list and Z-list celebrities and put them in, like, some, you know, tropical jungle island. And then they do, it's kind of like Survivor, but basically you, I know there's been a past episode where Margaret Thatcher's daughter ate kangaroo cock. So,
how fitting. You know,
yeah. So George Takei doesn't feel the need to take a political stand, but he's willing to debase himself on national British television by performing tasks as eating kangaroo dick, you know, for 5 minutes of fame.
Right.
But, you know, it doesn't matter if his marriage gets annulled by the state. Whatevs. Right. So, yeah, George Takei's on my shit list right now. Although, I suppose having his marriage taken away from him is punishment enough, some would argue, but...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we can now say, you know, shame on political apathy.
Yeah.
Shame.
Shame. But yeah, that's a severe digression from our worst movie accents.
That's true.
Of all time.
I had another one in mind, and you know who's really bad at doing Russian accents is Americans. I mean, Kate Blanchett. Wait, is she even American?
No, I think she's Australian.
Is she Australian? Okay, yeah. Australians are bad too, because she wasn't so good in the new Indiana Jones movie. She looked like a million bucks, but her Russian accent was pretty hit and miss. And Harrison Ford was also pretty bad with a Russian accent in that submarine movie. Was it a submarine movie?
He's in U-571?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. Oh, there's been some bad Scottish accents over the years.
Oh, I can imagine.
I don't know.
And you're the authority on Scottish accents because your family is from Scotland.
I should be, but now that I'm under the gun, I can't think of any bad Scottish accents except for my own attempts. What about really
Mel Gibson?
Oh, yes. Okay. Braveheart. Yeah. Big offender. Yes. Almost every actor in that movie that wasn't Scottish themselves had a pretty shitty.
Which is probably Scottish like all accent. The actors. Yes.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see. Bad accent.
Well, the movie I watched last night was The Alphabet Killer. And the basic story is that there's a killer who's abducting young girls, like, you know, 10 years old, and molesting them and killing them. But the unusual thing about the killings is that all the victims have names that start with the same letters. And he dumps the bodies in a town that has the same letter. So, like, the first victim was, like, Carla C, something like, you know, Carlos, I forget her last name, but, and she was dumped in Churchville. And so, you know, like the whole movie is about, you know, the alphabet killer.
Right.
And so there's a young, attractive police detective, played by, Eliza Dushku from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh man.
And, she's like, gets obsessed with this case as they always do in these kind of films. And her, ex-fiance / supervisor, when I remember seeing him, you know, in the early scenes when he's still her fiance and thinking, why is she with this guy? She could do so much better than him. He's kind of gross. He's got bad hair. He's kind of a flabby jelly roll. And in some of the scenes, and I don't know, I think I get more perceptive when I'm stoned. So I noticed little tiny details, like the fact that his makeup was like melting off his face and his makeup on his face was like 10 degrees whiter than his neck, which was red.
Oh.
And his face was all splotchy. And I remember thinking, this guy kind of looks like Cary Elwes. Is that how you pronounce it? The guy who's in Princess Bride.
Oh, yes.
And I'm like, this guy kind of looks like him, but like a really low-rent version of him, you know? Like, you found some bum in the street that kind of looked like him and put him in a movie. So I IMDb-TS, and it is Cary Elwes. And I was like, damn, you've gone downhill.
Shit.
He looks like a flabby jelly donut.
Oh.
But his accent was really bad because, as you know, he's English.
Right.
And the action takes place in Rochester, New York. And I think a lot of people have this misconception about New York that everybody in New York talks like this.
Right.
And they all have Staten Island accents. And that's kind of how he was talking. And I'm like, you're in upstate New York. Nobody, they just have generic American accents there.
Ouch.
And everybody else was just speaking, you know, with a regular American accent. And he was like, I'm telling you, you gotta look in the car for more evidence. And, you know, really horrible stuff like that. And I kind of tried to reconcile it by saying, well, maybe he grew up in Staten Island and then he moved upstate to get away from the madness of the hubbub and the city. And I was like, why am I justifying, why am I making excuses for this movie? This movie is so not worth it.
Yes.
So there was that. That was how I got started on the bad accents thing.
There are lots of bad Canadian accents out there. I mean, well, but I mean, they're mostly on comedy shows because you guys only ever talk about us when you're making fun. but, you know, everybody tries to do a Canadian accent. And
it always ends up sounding like Fargo.
Yeah, which is not how we talk.
No.
Because listen to me.
It's not even how they talk in Fargo.
Yeah. I lisp and I have a kind of ridiculous voice, and that's okay. But I do not talk like, you know.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I can't even think of a Canadian thing to say right now. I don't go out to the garage and get my boots so I can go oot in a boot in the
and get some nacho town cheese.
And yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay, I do say nacho, but but I mean, Americans.
I'm all out of Molson. I gotta go pick some up, eh?
I don't even drink Molson because it's bad.
I used to drink Molson because it was $2 at the bar where I went.
That's true. Actually, I used to drink Molson in college, in university. you guys are Americanizing me already. I've been here a month. I'm saying things like 12th grade instead of grade 12 and college instead of university. And
That's what we do to Canadians. That's how we do.
It's actually really fucked up.
I mean, if you want to talk about accents in film, like half the actors in America are Canadians, so
that's true.
They've got to put on convincing American accents, and I think they managed to pull it off.
Yeah,
because we brainwashed them.
It's true. It's true.
That's
I'm really
real agenda.
I'm actually really scared of losing my small Canadian accent. I really don't want it to go, because every once in a while somebody will notice that I'm from Canada and they'll do something nice for me because I'm from Canada.
Hey.
Yeah, like at the Academy of Sciences when Mike and I were there, some there was like a huge lineup to get into the planetarium show, and it was my birthday present, and Mike had, you know, spent money to get us tickets on one of the first days it was open, and nice. It was a madhouse, and we went to do everything, and there's a huge, huge lineup, and we couldn't figure out where to get the tickets, and we asked these two ladies, and they gave us their tickets, because they're like, oh, well, we're from around here, we'll just come back, you guys take them.
Nice.
And, so that was a score.
I gotta get in on this Canadian scam.
Yeah, well, I'm not aware that I'm doing it, so I'm not trying to actively milk it, but apparently I sound Canadian enough that I can be picked out of the crowd. And then sometimes storekeepers are like, oh, you're from Canada, you know, what are you doing here?
Oh, you can have it for free. I know we don't take your silly Canadian money here.
Actually, nobody does. I had to give my Canadian money to Mike to get it changed, because nobody would change it for me. Psychopaths. Anyways, so, okay. So, bad movie accents.
Well, there's also, The Alphabet Killer was kind of like a groundspring of bad movie of, you know, I can't think of the words I want to use, so I'm just making them up. You know, aspects of bad movies. And the other thing, in addition to a bad accent, was insensitive or callous portrayals of real life ailments. For example, right. the main character in the Alphabet Killer is schizophrenic.
Right.
And towards the end of the film, when she's really getting involved in the case, she's like, you know, having a relapse, and she's seeing shit and hearing voices. And Eliza Dushku's impersonation, you know, just to remind us throughout the movie that she has schizophrenia, she constantly like twitches and kind of like holds her neck like she's, you know, like having an episode, which seems, I mean, I'm not an expert on schizophrenia, but it seems to me like she's confusing the symptoms of schizophrenia with Tourette's.
Yeah.
I'm not aware that schizophrenics have bodily tics.
To my knowledge, they don't. You know, but they have multiple personalities, right? That means that they have like 18 different personalities, and they're, you know, they switch between them. And so it was probably somebody committing the crime with like a multiple personality, and then the real personality didn't even really know.
But there was also a guy in a wheelchair in the movie, which, I got, for Christmas, I got Pranjal, my boyfriend, a book about, written by Roger Ebert, which is a collection of his 0 to 1.5 star reviews over the past maybe 6 or 7 years. It's called Your Movie Sucks, which is taken from an open letter he wrote to Rob Schneider about Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Mm.
And it's very entertaining, the bad reviews, that is. Let's see, I wrote this down in a very eloquent way. Plot devices which exist not to enhance characters, but to...
Cheaply?
Thank you. You can read my writing and I can't. But to cheaply further the plot. So, like, for example, you know, like this guy in the wheelchair in the movie. He didn't have a wheelchair because it was part of his character. He had a wheelchair so that later in the movie he could get out of his wheelchair and we would all be shocked. Like, oh my God, it was a trick all along. He didn't need the wheelchair. So yeah, that was really annoying. I'm trying to think of how I could better phrase it than that. But, you know, things that exist in the movie only for a cheap shock later on.
Right.
You know, like the cat that lives in a house so it can, like, leap at you out of the shadows and scare you half to death.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I actually don't know. I was going to say something. It's gone.
Thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yeah. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Anyways.
Well, can you think of any other portrayals of medical conditions
insensitive.
That are particularly insensitive?
Well, you know, I can't think of any really specific ones because I'm kind of not all that good with remembering things. But I think people with eating disorders get picked on a lot. You know, it's like, oh, and vegans get picked on.
That's true.
A lot.
That's true.
You know, vegans are...
It is a medical condition, you know.
Right.
We didn't choose to be vegan.
No.
We were born like this.
No, pretty
much. We're coming to terms with this every day.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's really insensitive of you people.
Yeah.
God.
Quit it. So, I mean, vegans are always assholes.
Yeah.
Or crazed, enraged
feminists.
Right, right. With hairy armpits.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Who hate men.
Right.
But I secretly hate themselves more.
Right. And don't.
And once they learn to love themselves and start shaving again, they'll eat steak and everything will be fine.
Right. Maybe they'll even eat dick and everything will be even better.
Well, I was going to leave that unsaid, but.
Well, you know, we need to spell it out here for the
people.
That's
true.
Okay.
Well, I can think of one extraordinary portrayal, which is chronicled in TV Carnage.
Okay.
And TV Carnage, for anybody who doesn't know, is awesome, and you should know about it. It's basically, imagine a mixtape made with television. So it's this guy in Canada who, when he was, like, you know, in his teens, he had his wisdom teeth out, and he was hopped up on painkillers, and he couldn't leave the house because he was healing, and basically he was, you know, totally high on painkillers, and all he did was to entertain himself was, like, splice these tapes together of different TV shows he taped, and he just took the most bizarre, hilarious, grotesque parts and made this, like, 90-minute mixtape on a videotape. And so he's come out with, I think, 5 or 6 tapes since then, and you know, he's gotten popular enough that people submit clips to him. Like, my friend Jeff submitted a great commercial for a televangelist where the televangelist morphs into a fighter jet and flies off into the sky. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, the latest disc of TV Carnage, and you can always tell what particularly appalled the guy that does TV Carnage, because he you know, will put, like, a 15-minute clip in there rather than a 2-minute clip. So there was this Hallmark made-for-TV movie that came out a couple years ago called Riding the Bus with My Sister, based on, you know, the touching best-selling novel. And it starred Andie MacDowell as, you know, your typical high-flying, jet-setting professional woman, and then her dad back home in their small-town Americana. He dies, and she has to go home to look after her mentally retarded sister, who is played with great aplomb by Rosie O'Donnell. So you can imagine the delicacy and the tact which Rosie O'Donnell brings to this role.
Right.
She's basically, you know, doing the acting equivalent of a bull running through a china shop.
Ouch.
And it is appalling and grotesque. Those are the only words to describe it. And he includes various scenes of her running amok, and basically her idea of being, you know, mentally retarded is shouting a lot and talking like this.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's, oh man. It's like you kind of, when you watch it, your first reaction is kind of like, well, maybe a nuclear apocalypse wouldn't be so bad.
Right.
Maybe we really should start from a clean slate.
Right.
Here.
Right. Oh, Jesus.
Obviously humanity's crimes are just irredeemable at this point.
Too great for.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. Well, Rosie O'Donnell, you know, to me is always going to be the kind of unlovable, mannish female baseball player in a league of their own. Most memorable line
with a heart of gold.
Yeah, I remember was talking to her dad after the game. Steak dinner on you.
Rosie.
So, yeah, yeah. That's my Rosie O'Donnell.
That's
memory.
Our Rosie.
Yeah. So sorry, Rosie, but no.
No, you suck.
My
mom used to love her talk show when it was on, and this was back when I was either still in fashion school or had recently graduated, and she said something like, "Erica, you're a fashion designer. You know, Rosie always wears these boxy suits and they make her look so bad. What would you put her in to make her look better?" And my answer was a brown paper bag.
You heard it here first.
That's right. And just to be clear, we don't hate on Rosie because she's a lesbian. We hate on her because she's everything else.
It's true.
I think being a lesbian is probably her only redeeming feature, if anything. Oh yeah. Also, to the other thing that the Alphabet Killer brought up was based on a true story movies, which we talked about a little over brunch.
Yeah.
Because it was based on a true story, and I've noticed this trend lately in movies, and I think Fargo started it because Fargo claimed to be based on a true story, and then when they did research, it turned out it was complete bullshit, and it wasn't based on anything.
Right.
Except a story that Joel and Ethan Coen made the fuck up out of thin air.
Right.
But I think it really started this trend in movies to say, based on true events or inspired. If they're going to be marginally honest, they say inspired by true events.
Right.
But usually they just say based on a true story. And then when, you know, I've gotten to the point where if I see a preview or if I see a movie that's based on a true story, I immediately go to Wikipedia, I WTS, and I find out how true it actually is. And I think in most cases, it's true in the sense that something happened at some point in history.
Right.
And they take it from there. Like the, I think the most appalling use of that in recent history was the remake of the Amityville Horror.
Oh,
which was based on a true story in the sense that there was a house in Amityville where a mom, a stepdad, and two kids moved in, and it was haunted. And I think that's about, that's where fiction parts from
that
fact.
That's it. Okay, right. So there wasn't actually a gateway to hell in the house.
Yeah, and there wasn't, like, a torture chamber for Native Americans in the basement of the house.
Okay,
and the stepdad didn't actually kill the family dog, which is a pretty libelous thing to put in a movie that's supposedly based on a true story.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, dad of the Amityville Horror House, if you are listening.
Yeah.
You know,
George something or other.
You could pay for your kid's college that was probably 30 years ago. But they still could be paying off
loans. Well, apparently, he basically took an interest. When he heard there was a remake, he was just like, oh, I'd like to see the screen. You know, it wasn't like confrontational. It was like, oh, hey, this is my story. I'd like to see what you guys are going to do. And the studio responded by, like, threatening him with a lawsuit. And he was like, whoa, where'd that come from? And, you know, so basically they did everything short of libel in this movie against this poor man who's probably had enough trouble in his life.
Right. With having a gateway to hell in his house.
Yeah. And then threatened to sue him on top of that for having the gall to claim his life as the original source material for their fantastic movie.
What an asshole.
I know. What a selfish prick. So yeah, there's that. And then The Alphabet Killer is based on a true story, which... of course, I WTS'd as soon as I saw the preview, which is that in the 1970s in the Rochester area, there were three girls who were killed who had matching initials and whose bodies were dumped in a town that started with the same letter. And that's about where it is. You know, the detective that investigated it wasn't schizophrenic. I won't spoil the ending, but, you know, I'm pretty sure that it didn't end the way it did in the movie. And in the movie they show her, like, you know, she's haunted by the ghosts of these girls who were killed and they're going, help us, help us. And, eventually, you know, it grows to be like seven or eight ghosts. And then they say like the Alphabet Killer was never caught, but there were only three victims, you know? So they're obviously like, you know, expanding upon that there.
Right.
So, and the other, based on a true story movie that I saw was The Strangers with Liv Tyler.
Oh, I've heard of this one, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's, you know, it was kind of decent. You know, I kind of wish they hadn't put the based on true story in there at all, because I think it could stand on its own without people going like, oh my God, this actually happened.
Right, right.
It wasn't a great movie, but it wasn't as bad as The Alphabet Killer. Obviously the premise of the movie is like these people... they're staying in, like, the family summer house, which isn't used very often, and these people come out of nowhere in the middle of the night and start terrorizing them and then tie them up, and, you know, and they're wearing masks, and it's all really scary. So I investigate this based on a true story thing, and it turns out that the director, when the director was, like, 5 or 6 years old, someone came to his house and asked for someone who didn't live there and then went away. And then a couple days later, several houses in the neighborhood were robbed. And that was the true story that The Strangers is based on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Nobody came into his house and hogtied him and Liv Tyler and, you know, So, yeah. So I'm wondering if you've seen any movies recently or can recall any that are supposedly based on true stories that are really not.
You know, I really suck at thinking on my feet about movies.
Should I email you the questions beforehand before
maybe.
We do a podcast?
I'm slow. I'm slow.
It's okay, you're Canadian.
I know. But still, you know, I'm trying to compete in this cutthroat American world, and I'm falling behind. You know what we should do? While we've been talking here, I've actually been thinking of ideas that could give this like some structure a little bit. Not that the free flow of
okay,
you know, is a bad thing, of course, but you know, we're both bums.
Yeah.
And so we both have all this time to fill during the week while we're being bums.
Totally.
So maybe we should do like a, you know, jobless segment. We could talk about, you know,
being jobless.
Have a bum's perspective on the world.
Nice.
What?
I think we should have the metal minute because Pranjal just walked in the room.
What?
We're gonna do a metal minute.
Oh, okay.
Metal minute. Go.
What's a metal minute?
I don't know. It's your segment.
Oh.
Hit the ground running. You can talk about metal for a minute. And your minute starts now.
To all who enjoy black metal, I would urge that everyone check out this video on YouTube called Hail Satan 2. It's a really great documentary about the lifestyle of two young metalheads in Sweden and the problems they face and the struggle and oppression that they deal with every day, and the harsh reality of their lives and their struggle to be true, which yes. is the real sort of crux of the problem is the struggle to be true, to be så jävla true, yeah. So yes, Hail Satan 2. Type it into your YouTube search engine. It's about 15 minutes long. If you got some time to kill, check it out and have a laugh.
All right, metal minute is over. You forgot the empty coffee pot to make more coffee.
Oh.
There you go. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bang Maid.
Black metal terrorists make the best coffee.
Bang Maid from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's what Danny DeVito calls Charlie's mom when he starts dating her again. She's his Bang Maid. And he calls her that to her face. Bang Maid! Bring Jeez. Me some more popcorn.
That Danny DeVito.
It's a great show.
He's a real catch.
Yeah.
He is. I would do him.
He's, 5 feet tall?
Something like that.
Overweight, bald.
Yep. Yeah.
But I like that he embraces that. He's like, fuck it. This is who I am.
Yeah.
I'm the penguin.
Exactly.
So yes, the jobless,
right,
the hobo hour,
right, a bum's life,
a bum's life. Hey, I like that.
All right,
maybe that should be the name of our podcast.
That would be not bad.
Shiftless Layabout Radio Incorporated.
There, I like that too.
Yeah,
you know, why don't we?
Fuck you, Jeff Goldblum. We're throwing Jeff Goldblum under the bus.
All right, see ya, Jeff. your chaos theory has no sway here. Well, I don't know. Let's just. I like this timed thing. So why don't we each take a minute and a half and talk about being a bum?
Okay.
Cool. Do you want to go first or should I?
I'll go first since you seem to have trouble thinking.
Extemporizing.
Yes. Yeah, you can ignore me while I talk and think about your.
I'll think about my response.
Think about your answer. Right. I am unemployed. I've been unemployed. It is currently January 11th. 2009, where we are recording, and I've been unemployed officially since November 15th of 2008, when I finished work on the No on Prop 8 campaign. Wait, are we taking a minute and a half?
Yes.
Okay. I forgot when I started.
No.
But, okay. Awesome. I became unemployed November 15th and applied for unemployment, got it to my great surprise. I'm loving it. It's the second time I've been on unemployment, but with many years of productive work in between. That's what I'm doing in my free time,
making up words. Good.
Yeah. Watching a lot of movies, working on an Etsy shop, strangeandviolent.etsy.com. Watching more movies, reading a few books, hanging out with my smelly dog, smoking up. yeah, I've only managed to fill about a minute, but that's pretty much what I've been doing.
All right.
Because, you know, when you're unemployed, you don't have a minute and a half to talk about what you do all day.
Right, right. And, you know, if you're unemployed, you're also stupid.
So. Yes, obviously.
Yeah. So my unemployed minute and a half. I'm Canadian. And not legal to work here. So that's kind of my excuse, except that, well, it's not really an excuse because I think thousands and thousands of people work here without being entitled to every day. So anyways, I'm finding that a really good way to spend my time while I'm unemployed is knitting.
Awesome.
And also looking on the internet at things to knit.
I like
it. It's a really, really, really excellent time waster. because knitting takes a really long time. So I've currently got two projects on the go. And sometimes instead of working on them so I can finish them and move on to a new project, I just look at patterns on the internet for new things.
Yeah, I like. It's a good idea.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I like to do in my unemployed time is go to the Rainbow Cooperative Grocery 8 times a day.
Yeah.
and almost every single time that I'm there, I'll pick up a peanut butter cup and eat it full of shame on the way home. and apart from that, I'm trying to read, but sometimes I don't do that very successfully. And
yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough when you're unemployed because obviously you're stupid and illiterate if you're unemployed.
Exactly. Exactly. It's hard to be literate when you're unemployed. But yeah, knitting, looking on the internet for knitting projects, and then and then also making plans on the internet with my various friends. That's pretty much it.
LOL, should we podcast today?
Yeah.
Okay. TTYL.
So I guess we'll wrap up now. So
yes.
This is us.
I have a wrap-up question for you.
Okay.
Who or what is the craziest thing you've seen at Rainbow Grocery?
At Rainbow Grocery?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well...
I mean, I know that's kind of a loaded question because it's in San Francisco. So
yeah, it is.
I'm sure every time you go in there, you see stuff like 10 times crazier than what you're used to in Canada.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, mostly I'm just really overwhelmed by the sheer amount of money and cluelessness that almost everybody who shops there has. Like, I just...
Welcome to the Bay Area! Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's amazing. Like, I just, you know, I'm Canadian, so I'm really polite. And if I accidentally bump somebody with my cart or my little basket, I say, you know, oh, I'm sorry. And if somebody's standing in the middle of the aisle, you know, reading from cover to cover nutritional healing or something like that, then I'd say, you know, excuse me to get by. And I don't know.
Those are kind of novel concepts here.
I'm figuring that out. I'm realizing that the appropriate course of action is to push harder with my basket when I bump somebody so that I have more of a way to pass.
Fuck you!
And when people are standing in my way, I should probably just kick them down.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. And right on. So yeah, it's not really crazy, but just the sheer volume of people who are just like totally up their own asses is just kind of stupefying.
Yeah, that kind of defines the Bay Area. Yeah. Up their own asses.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the city motto.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, some hipsters who are up their asses in a different way.
well, the craziest thing I've seen at my local grocery store, which I live in the East Bay, so my favorite local store is Berkeley Bowl, which gets pretty crazy. One time I was shopping and I heard some music that wasn't like, I don't think they play music at Berkeley Bowl, I'm pretty sure. So I heard this music coming from somewhere and it was like moving. So it was like, you know, it was obviously like a radio with somebody. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, where is that coming from? And I look over and I see this guy coming out of the end of an aisle and he's got, I seem to remember he was wearing some kind of crazy ass outfit and he was pushing a stroller with a boombox in it. And the boombox was playing like total like 70s Parliament funk.
Nice.
Yeah. And I don't think he bought anything. He just kind of like, you know, wheeled his little baby boombox in and kind of showed everyone that he was cool and mm-hmm. then left.
And that was that.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Huh. It was pretty fun. So that's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah. So I guess that brings our first podcast to a close.
We hope that you've enjoyed it.
Yes. And maybe by the time we get this up somewhere, like iTunes, we'll have a name for it.
Yeah, hopefully.
But not Jeff Goldblum, because he's under the bus.
Right. Sorry, Mr. Goldblum.
Okay, so thanks for listening, and
see you next time.